Our next speaker is going to be Dr. Jim Fall. He is the Research Director for the Division of Subsistence for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Current research involves studies of contemporary subsistence hunting and fishing in Alaska. And his talk will be Chinook Salmon Subsistence Harvest in Alaska, Recent Patterns and Trends. Jim. We've got a laser pointer now, too, if you want it.
Good morning, and thanks for this opportunity to provide some background information about Chinook salmon subsistence harvest in Alaska. And I guess we've got a security alert. So I better stop and see what this is about. Okay. There we go. I'd like to start out by acknowledging the help I received from many others in providing data, other research findings, and photographs. And I've got 20 minutes, so my overall goal is to present a big picture, a general overview of subsistence harvest of Chinook in Alaska. I'd like to discuss some general statewide patterns, then focus on recent 20-year patterns and trends for the indicator stocks. I'd like to describe subsistence harvest assessment methods that we use to collect harvest data, introduce some contributions of traditional knowledge to the discussion, and then identify some data gaps. What is the role statewide of Chinook salmon in subsistence harvest? Well, as in the top pie diagram shows, since 1994, Chinook salmon provided on average about 17% of statewide subsistence salmon if measured in pounds of fish, in numbers of fish, ranking third after sockeyes and chums. But king salmon come in large packages, so as measured in usable pounds, as shown in the bottom pie, they have provided since 1994 about 34% of statewide subsistence salmon harvest, ranking first. Of course, these rankings vary a great deal by area. And also note that we don't have complete data for 2011, and data for 2012 are not yet available. Subsistence harvests of Chinook salmon play a critical role in the economy and way of life of tens of thousands of Alaskans and hundreds of Alaska communities. They've played this vital role for centuries. Alaska's many cultural groups have distinct traditions of use of Chinook, as evidenced in part by their own special names for kings, and here are some examples in this slide. Chinook salmon support thriving traditions in Alaska today. Harvests are accomplished mostly with nets and fish wheels. There's a wide array of methods that are used to process and put up Chinook salmon at fish camps and in communities. Harvesting, processing, and sharing Chinook salmon bond families together and generations together in relationships of mutual support. These are contexts in which children and adults learn skills, traditional knowledge, and values that they need to make a living in their communities today. Chinook salmon are a large portion of Alaska's food supply. Statewide, about 12% of the total subsistence harvest in rural Alaska, as estimated in usable pounds, is Chinook salmon. Again, these patterns vary by region and community, but Chinook salmon are important everywhere where they occur. And anyone who's had the opportunity to participate in or observe subsistence fishing and processing in a fish camp or in a village can attest to the skill and the artistry that's on display. Okay, where are Chinook salmon harvested in Alaska subsistence fisheries? Since 1994, the first year we have reasonably complete statewide coverage, 54% of the Chinook have been taken in the Kuskokwim management area, mostly in the Kuskokwim River, 30% in the Yukon management area, 9% in Bristol Bay, and then smaller percentages in northwest Alaska, the Copper River, southeast Alaska, the Tionic subdistrict of Upper Cook Inlet, and in many other smaller fisheries. What are the Chinook salmon subsistence harvest trends statewide since 1994? Through 2008, the annual average subsistence harvest was about 172,000 Chinook salmon statewide, ranging from a low about 140,000 to highs of almost 200,000. Statewide, subsistence harvests of Chinook were down markedly in 2009, 2010, and 2011, largely due to declines in Kuskokwim harvest and, to a lesser extent, Yukon harvest. The data for 2011 are incomplete, but based upon what we do have for the state's largest Chinook subsistence fisheries, 2011 was the lowest year in this time series. Because there are hundreds of Chinook stocks in Alaska, ADF&G's gap analysis identified 12 indicator stocks. Two of those, Yukon and Kuskokwim, provide about 84% of the subsistence harvest. There's three others, Nushagak, Susitna, which is the Tionic subdistrict for this discussion, and the Copper River average annual subsistence harvest of more than 1,000 fish. And the seven remaining, Chignik, Karla, Kenai, Chilkat, Taku, Stikeen, and Unuk, average annual subsistence harvest of less than 200 fish. And another concept that I'd like to introduce is ANS, or the amount reasonably necessary for subsistence, which Alaska law requires the Board of Fisheries to establish in regulation. These are a tool for evaluating performance of management and regulatory systems over the long term and providing subsistence fishing opportunities. Generally, ANS is established as a range, and as shown in this slide, specific Chinook salmon ANS ranges have been established only for four of the indicator stocks, and the ANS ranges for most of the other indicator stocks are for salmon, that is, for all species combined. And now I'd like to focus on four of these indicator stocks to illustrate some possible patterns and trends. That's Yukon, Kuskokwim, Nushagak, and Susitna. And let's start in the north with the Yukon River Chinook. Recent household harvest surveys in selected communities, and there's 12 shown in this slide, show that very large portions of households in Yukon River drainage communities use, fish for, and share Chinook salmon. 80 to 90% or more use Chinook salmon. 50 to 70% participate in subsistence fisheries for Chinook salmon. These surveys also show that a large portion of the total subsistence harvest of all subsistence foods in Yukon area communities is made up of Chinook salmon. And there are, of course, differences among communities and across years. In any particular year, harvests are shaped by many factors, such as run strength and timing, weather, the availability of other subsistence resources. Changes in community size also affect long-term trends in harvests, as do economic circumstances, including the cost of fuel and equipment, and, of course, regulations and conservation measures. All these things need to be taken into account when we look at the time series data for subsistence harvests. That said, this slide shows estimated subsistence harvests of Chinook salmon in the Yukon River area going back to 1990, based for the most part on annual ADF&G postseason household surveys. Through 2008, the annual average subsistence harvest was about 51,000 Chinook salmon. Since 2008, the estimated harvests have been below that long-term average. And in addition, since 2008, subsistence Chinook harvests in the Yukon drainage have been below the minimum ANS of 45,500 Chinook salmon. And we can also see differences since 2008 by looking at the annual average harvest of Chinook salmon per fishing household. While the annual average has varied over time, the long-term average from 1990 through 2007 was 34 kings per fishing household. This average has been below 30 since 2008 and was around 25 in 2009 and 2011. Now, these averages do not tell us how much effort fishing families needed to invest to achieve their harvest goals. In other words, in years of below average returns, harvest goals might be achieved only by fishing more days. That information is not collected in post-season surveys. This is also a reason why total subsistence harvests are not necessarily correlated with run size and strength. Fishing families have goals that they strive to achieve. They're based upon traditional use levels and processing capacity. And regardless of abundance, they quit fishing when these goals are achieved. We can also see changes in subsistence Chinook harvests over time in the Yukon area by comparing comprehensive survey data for communities. There are 7 Yukon River communities in this slide. All had comprehensive survey estimates available in the 1980s or 1990s. Those are the blue bars in the slide. Harvests are expressed in pounds usable weight of king salmon per person. The red bar for each community shows comparable estimates for 2009, 2010, or 2011. 5 communities declined quite notably in these comparisons. Now, these are, of course, limited comparisons. There's just 7 communities, only 2 years of data shown in this slide, but the findings are consistent with the annual postseason survey data that I just reviewed. Okay, let's turn now to the Kuskokwim River. Recent comprehensive surveys for 16 communities there show that, as in the Yukon area, most households engage in subsistence uses of Chinook salmon and fish for them in recent study years. And these recent surveys also show that Chinook salmon are a very large portion of total subsistence harvests, about 15% or more in each community, as estimated in usable pounds. This slide shows Kuskokwim River subsistence harvests of Chinook salmon from 1990 through 2011, again from annual household postseason surveys that ADF&G does with partners. The annual average through 2008 was 86,000 Chinook. Estimated harvest declined each year after 2008, with below-average harvest beginning in 2009. The estimated harvest was below the minimum ANS of 64,500 salmon for the first time in 2011. And there also have been changes in the average Chinook salmon harvest per household in the Kuskokwim area, again as estimated by annual postseason surveys. For 2009 to 2011, the average was around 15 to 16 fish per household, below most years back to 1990, which were generally above 20, sometimes over 25. Right, turning to the Nishigak River, which is a primary producer of Chinook salmon in the Bristol Bay area, as in the Yukon and Kuskokwim, Chinook salmon are a key subsistence resource for communities in the Nishigak watershed, with most households using and fishing for and sharing kings. King salmon are a large portion of the total subsistence harvest in Bristol Bay and Nishigak River communities, like 15% in this slide in Clark's Point, to almost 30% of the total subsistence harvest in New Stoyahawk. This slide shows estimated Chinook salmon harvest for the Nishigak District based upon subsistence salmon permit returns, in this case, going back to 1980. The average annual harvest from 2000 to 2009 was about 13,000 Chinook salmon. 2008 and 2009 were right at about that average. 2010 appears to have been a low year, but harvest bounced back in 2011. There's no specific ANS established for Nishigak kings, so we don't, at least not yet, see the pattern that we saw earlier for the Kuskokwim and the Yukon for subsistence harvest. That is consistently lower harvest over the last several years. This slide shows average Chinook harvest per permit issued for the Nishigak district. And the average since 1980 is about 26 Chinook salmon, although there has been considerable year-to-year variation in that harvest level. Although average harvests over the last decade or so appear to be lower than earlier, there's no recent trend that's yet apparent. Okay, the subsistence fishery in the Tyonic subdistrict of Upper Cook Inlet is the only subsistence fishery that targets Susitna River Chinook, which is an indicator stock, although other Chinook stocks are likely harvested in this fishery too. A large majority of the participants in this fishery live in one village, Tyonek. Reliable harvest data are available back to 1980 forward. Harvest dropped in the early 1990s, at least in part due to declines in the population of Tyonek. Average annual harvest since 1990 are just over 1,000 Chinook salmon. Total harvests in 2009, 2010, and 2011 at around 600 to 800 fish were all well below that previous average among the lowest harvests on record, and in two of those years were below the ANS minimum of 700 Chinook salmon. The average Chinook salmon per permit in this fishery averaged 12 fish in 2009 through 2011. This is less than half the long-term average of about 25. And I'll move on to take a really quick look at some of the other indicator stocks. Copper River is complex because there's four fisheries, including a personal use fishery. Much of the river is accessible by road. It's primarily a sockeye subsistence fishery. Conservation measures have been taken by the Board of Fisheries for Chinook salmon, including reducing annual limits in the personal use fishery, now at one king per permit per year. So there has been an overall drop in the combined subsistence personal use harvest, as shown in this slide. Subsistence harvests on Copper River stocks rose in the 1990s due to the opening of the fishery to all Alaskans, eligibility to all Alaskans, but they have leveled off over the last decade and it averaged about 3,000 per year. Southeast Alaska, reported subsistence harvests there are 83% sockeyes. Chinook make up about 2% of the reported subsistence harvest there, a little over 1,000 fish from 1990 through 2010. Most are taken around Yakutat for the four indicator stocks, about 200 a year or less in the Chilkat River, and Taku, Stikine, and Unik, probably less than 100 a year taken in the subsistence fisheries. There are three other indicator stocks I just wanted to mention briefly. Chinook River, the recent 10-year average is about 150 Chinook in the subsistence fishery, less than 100 taken annually in the Karlik River. And finally, the Kenai River has no subsistence fishery because it's in a non-subsistence area, but the personal use harvest in the dip net fishery from 2007 through 2009 averaged about 1,400 fish. Okay, how do we collect annual harvest information about subsistence salmon? Most of the subsistence harvest assessment programs are run by ADF&G, sometimes with partners. There are also some federal permit programs in place. There are basically three tools of the trade for collecting subsistence harvest data. First are permits. They're used when the Board of Fisheries or the Federal Subsistence Board adopts a permit requirement by regulation. Permit systems are in place for 10 of the 12 indicator stocks. And all permit systems require recording harvests and turning in the report at the end of the year. The second tool is post-season harvest surveys. These are used when permits are not required, which is the case in the two largest Chinook subsistence fisheries, Yukon for the most part. There are some permits sections in the Yukon River and Kuskokwim. Some permit systems are supplemented by post-season surveys also. Post-season survey participation is voluntary. Surveys are generally administered to a random sample of households and area communities with a census sample as the target in smaller places. And the third tool are calendars sent out early in the season in Yukon and Kuskokwim as a voluntary data recording tool. They're not relied upon by themselves for total estimates. And it's also important to note that there are several in-season qualitative harvest assessment programs in place for the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers that are done in coordination with the working groups for those rivers. These programs do not collect harvest numbers, but they provide important in-season evaluations of subsistence fishing and information about salmon returns. And here real quickly is an example of a subsistence permit, this one for Bristol Bay. The obverse of the permit, we collect demographic information and contact information for the household. And then on the reverse, there's a form for recording harvest by date, location, and species. And all permits have a form similar to this one. And when completed and returned, permits provide very precise information. But permit systems obviously collect data only from fishers who obtain and return permits. And this is why some programs supplement permits with post-season surveys. And then here's an example of a post-season survey. This is one for the Kuskokwim. Harvest numbers are obtained through retrospective recall. These harvests are for the entire season. And no days fished or timing data are collected, usually through the retrospective recall method. Surveys do obtain evaluations of harvests by the fishers. And this is something generally not collected in permit programs. These are especially important and valuable because harvest numbers alone don't tell the whole story about how well or how poorly a season went. And here's an example of a calendar that's mailed out, this one for the Kuskokwim. The calendars provide a lot of detail if used, but return rates, which are voluntary, generally fairly low, 15%, for example, for the Yukon River in 2010. Now, calendars could be collected more frequently to provide in-season information or to encourage recording of data for compiling at the end of the year. However, in-season data collection results in added costs and increased respondent burden and possibly in the possibility of respondent and researcher burnout. I'm not going to say too much about traditional knowledge now because I think we'll have some more discussions of that later. We believe that TEK or LTK, TEK traditional ecological knowledge, LTK local and traditional knowledge, is an essential part of subsistence harvest assessment programs. It provides important information that informs and complements data from fishery science. Traditional knowledge provides time depth on subsistence fisheries and the stocks themselves. Traditional knowledge focuses in a very fine-grained way on specific localities for trends and conditions, provides a context for understanding those trends, an economic context, a cultural context, a demographic context, an environmental context. Detailed information about changes in salmon habitat is provided through traditional knowledge. Information about changes in timing and abundance of returns. The condition of the fish can be described in great detail by people who work with them. And the collection of this information also promotes really excellent collaboration between fishery scientists, anthropologists, and the people who use the resource. Getting close to the end here, since I've run out of time, what are some of the gaps in data needs? Well, I've tried to provide some of those as I've talked through this. We need more detailed timing and effort data, especially for areas that rely primarily on post-season surveys. We need better and more complete in-season assessments by the fishers themselves about how things are going. This is done pretty well for selected communities in the Yukon and Kuskokwim, but we don't get that information for other large systems. Post-season assessments by fishers are only provided when we do post-season surveys. The permit returns themselves really don't tell us why things changed, and we need more help with that from the subsistence fishers. Patterns and trend analysis of the information we have collected over the decades would help us better understand why subsistence fisheries go up and down. As I said before, it's not entirely connected to run strength and abundance. There are a lot of other factors that affect year-to-year variation in subsistence fisheries. We need to know more about that. And finally, TEK and LTK studies need to be done. There have been some really excellent ones done on the Yukon River and selected communities in the past decade or so, but we really lack very focused and comprehensive studies for the other systems. To conclude then, Chinook salmon are among the most important subsistence resources in Alaska. Two fisheries, Yukon and Kuskokwim, account for over 80% of the annual subsistence harvest. Subsistence harvest have been down since 2008 due mostly to declines in Yukon, Kuskokwim, and Cook Inlet subsistence fisheries. ANS was not achieved from 2008 to 2011 in the Yukon, in 2011 for the Kuskokwim, and in 2009 and 2011 for Tionic, the Susitna stock. Gaps exist in annual monitoring of subsistence fisheries and in documentation of TEK and LTK. And with that, I thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Questions from the panel, please.
Courtney.
Thanks, Jim. That was a great presentation. I had a couple questions. Have you noticed any trends over time in the number of households participating in subsistence in the region? You mentioned the number of harvests might have been going down, but the number of households participating, has that changed over time?
Generally, no.
Okay. And then also in terms of the TEK, are you aware of, we were talking in the last session about, or the last presentation about historical data sort of pre-1970s. Are you aware of any of the maybe archaeological or different kinds of studies that might increase that time depth in terms of past trends?
I think those studies do exist and could be investigated for an even longer time depth than the memory of elders provides. So I think some of that does exist. It's going to be spotty, and it might not provide exactly the kind of detail that we need. But I think taking a look at those studies and then asking the experts, the living experts, about those earlier studies would be extremely informative.
Further questions? Tom.
Hi, Jim. I just noticed one thing in your presentation. You had mentioned the Kenai River and it being in a non-subsistence use area, but I wanted to remind you that there is a federal subsistence fishery.
Okay.
On the Kenai in a very narrow band of federal lands around Moose Range Meadows. Now, I believe that there hasn't been any reported harvest of Chinook salmon since it started. It's been there about 5-6 years, I think. And it's limited to rod and reel and I think dip netting from a boat. So it's kind of difficult to use. And so just wanted to remind you of that on the Kenai.
Yeah, thanks for that reminder. That fishery is there, and I'm sure it's important for the people who participate in it.